Hey, good people. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me, Pam Booker, host of Where's Your Tree, a podcast series dedicated to liberating storytelling and conversations on green topics, social change, and sustainable living. Here we are, tittering between seasons and perhaps between worlds or intersections of space and time, human constructs that serve as our conduits through which to locate ourselves in the world. What happens, though, when we dare to surrender Western notions of time to other kinds of visitations? This is a concept that I explore in this episode, Conjurings and Agitations, along with an excerpt from a short story that bridges the autumnal season to winter, and the transformative mutiny and reform, as I see it, that these linked seasons inevitably discharge. With autumn's transition into winter, increasing waves of political protest and social unrest are rising in this country and on so many of the world stages, from Haiti to Hong Kong. Most of them are steeped in our unifying mistrust of corrupt governments and the people who run them. Folks are agitated, angered by abuses of power and how unchecked power and authority erodes freedoms and our very humanity. We feel the trickle-down effect of this tension in our daily interactions while on the subway, inside campus classrooms, and in meetings with colleagues. The multitudes are resisting long-standing injustices and the ways in which we no longer adhere to business as usual or to simply get along, especially when everything from economic parity to the true state of this planet's climate health are being framed by alternative facts and, frankly, by liars. I was saddened when I heard an Iraqi woman lament in an interview recently that her people have no dreams. Autumn is a significant period, I think, in which we are challenged on the one hand to stay clear-eyed and present for the very real tasks that demand our urgent attention and creative engagement for closing out the calendar year, envisioning the one to follow. We are also invited to slow things down, when we can, of course, with winter's arrival, to explore and acquire the necessary knowledge and instruments and wisdom required of the good fight. As we also learn, I hope, to dream again. This period is also part of the culminating days of celebrating saints and souls, Samhain, and it's a very compelling Mercury retrograde in Scorpio that lasts until about November 20th. For those of you who pay attention to mystical cycles, and for those of you who pretend you don't. In addition to the real and inexplicable oddities of technology malfunctions and scheduling mishaps, miscommunication, and related kinds of heightened entanglement and fallouts, mostly what you learn is to experience these periods with patience and humor. According to astrologist Chani Nicholas, Mercury retrograde is an underworld journey that ushers us into the liminal space between the past and present, reason and intuition, the material and spiritual. I can live with that. With these often unquantifiable elements in mind, and to honor the colorful, otherworldly expressiveness of the autumnal season, I'm excited to read an excerpt from a speculative series of short fiction that I'm writing. This one is tentatively called Home. It explores what happens when a woman who's inherited a set of family heirlooms conjures an unsuspecting visitation. I'll be back home in just a moment. Taylor scrubbed the morning's jog from her skin, unaware that in some other parallel realm, a dark force, a haint, as the old folks used to say, slithered from the large Pierre mirror that hung gallantly on the vestibule's high wall of her apartment building. On the most recent occasion of Taylor's discovery of water puddles in the lobby was probably the first sign that a foot, or perhaps a finger, had managed to spill past the thin boundaries of here and over there, close and beyond. Past attempts for entry into the earthly world peopled by the living had proven mostly unsuccessful. So the haint had at it again and again until entry was secured. The bathroom was Taylor's dwelling of comfort and renewal, her space of possibility, perhaps the only room in her entire home, maybe in the entire world, that allowed Taylor to respond to calls of deep weariness and the profound recovery that ensues with bubbles and soap. Her bathroom was also the one place where glaring whiteness was only sourced from shiny wall tiles and glazed ceramics and the recollections and reflections of her brown skin, taut in some regions and in others not so much. In a time of powerful mistrust and discarded bodies, she entered into the bathing as one would, in need of ritual and self-scrubbing, and for purposes of cleansing and reconciliation of body to mind, to spirit, to soul. The morning's dazzling light squeezed through the narrow glass panes from the ceiling's cathedral-like formation. It reminded her of Oxford, when she was a student there and learned that the dense number of church steeples that penetrated the city's architecturally devout skyline were intentionally poking for gods in the clouds. How ironic that the strength and deception of aloof deities, the gods, would cross Taylor's thoughts during an otherwise tranquil moment. On the one hand, she sought gratitude and a just outcome for Neville's healthy recovery following his near murderous assault by the police yesterday. She sent Lakshmi, the new neighbor who'd been his unintended psychotic casualty, all the light she could bask in as well, and generally clamored for peace in her soul and on this planet. A shower water pelted her thyroid glands, glided down the designs of her breasts, hips, and buttocks. Funny, though, how opposing forces can operate simultaneously both in the known world of our everyday earthbound lives and others in multiple parallel habitats, carrying on in settings that are equally mighty and filled part with grace and part deceit. With considerable ruthless effort and assistance from any number of willing tricksters and shady characters, after all, it was the underworld, the haint, the entity, creature, call it what you please, finally slithered its entire self into human form. Other mirrors would have proven too diminutive to support its crossing over. The surmounting attempt occurred through the largest mirror portal, which, based on its very girth, proved an unwitting platform for persistent malevolence. Once the beast crossed over, it bolted frantically up two flights of stairs and knocked at Taylor's apartment door with the urgency of a soul who cursed the multi-headed dog Cerberus for entry into the gates of Hades. Not realizing, of course, that to step across the threshold into the earthly world was to be eternally captive, this monstrosity was the first to escape in millennia. And Cerberus would pay dearly. Raised up in the waters of the River Styx, this creature, this haint, vowed to protect itself from Achilles' unfortunate mark of weakness in the heel of his foot, an accidental infirmity caused by his well-meaning mother. Instead, it festered on on the art of breakable oaths, such as practiced by authority figures in the earthly world, police, military generals, corrupt presidents, skills reinforced at the river's edge. Now, back in Hades, many thought the creature was too incompetent, dim-witted, or shady to accomplish such a miraculous feat of escape. And in many ways, it was. Yet to escape one's hell is one thing. To do it with such gangster prowess, well, now that was sublime. What they underestimated were its amphibious features, its strengths, adept at producing nightmares and willing to relive them again and again, the way water creatures shed skin and claws in the battle for breath and terrestrial gills. One day, the entity anointed itself Styx. "I am Styx," it announced, before slitting the balls of the three-headed dog that guarded the gates, and then blackmailed Hermes to ferry it to daylight into the upper world. "I would rather be a paid servant in a poor fool's house and be above ground than queen or king among the dead," was the creature's parting statement. Taylor reached to turn off the shower water, regretting that she didn't have enough time for a more luxurious bath in her tricked-out spa tub, a stationary race car with nearly a dozen jets capable of 4 speed levels. In her reach, she suddenly lost balance, her head spinning loose. She braced herself against the wall, using her elbow to prop her weight until regaining composure. Maybe it was a mild vertigo spell, she thought. She didn't feel faint as much as transported, as though a shifting of some terrific weight beyond her body had occurred. Seconds later, a series of urgent door buzzer rings cut through the air, causing her to flinch against the shower wall. Whew, I think I scurred myself. Thanks again for joining me for another episode of Where's Your Tree? Before signing off, I'd like to offer a shout out to 2 friends with projects that are deserving of your support. Gabrilla Ballard's revamped podcast, Radical Magical Brilliance, Centering the Well-Being of Black Women, can be found on iTunes. She's a powerful, motivating advocate for guiding Black women to healthier choices in all aspects of living. And she's a dear friend, a former student. So listen to Radical Magical Brilliance. And Florine Demosthenes, a dynamic, internationally celebrated mixed media artist, launched a solo show this month that runs through December at the MarianneIbrahim.com gallery in Chicago. If you're in the area, get there. Her work is a mesmerizing burst of unapologetic, self-directed gaze that celebrates the Black female form, sexuality, and agency. You can find more information on them both at my website blog, wheresyourtree.com. And of course, you can always find me at the website as well, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or drop a line to Pamela at wheresyourtree.com. Please subscribe, say hey, let me know how you like the story, and share the podcast with friends. Until the next time, be still. Stand in love. Pay attention. Ciao.